Rivers and fish have been in steady decline in the United States for more than a century. There's not much left that hasn't been altered by dams, irrigation projects, and hatcheries. In the first of two National Geographic radio expedition stories, NPR's Elizabeth Arnold ventured to the Russian Far East to glimpse the past. She visited the Kamchatka Peninsula, where fishermen and scientists are trying to understand and protect one of the world's last remaining strongholds of wild salmon, steelhead, and trout.
Going back in time shouldn't be easy, and it's not. It's a 5-hour flight from Alaska across the Bering Sea and another 2 hours in customs before we catch first sight of a place that's been sealed off from foreigners and even most Russians for 65 years. Strategically located, the Kamchatka Peninsula was once a Cold War listening post. The evidence is everywhere. Abandoned radio towers and cracked concrete runways, overgrown earthen bunkers, and rusted hulks of spy planes. Another relic is our transportation, a repainted military helicopter that's being loaded for the final leg of the trip. We wedge in between outboard motors and fuel drums and lift precariously off the ground. It's a long, cold ride. The stench of diesel is sickening and rainwater drips from overhead. But faces pressed against the windows were open-mouthed as we fly first over snow-rimmed volcanoes. Then slopes of birch and tamarack sweep down into broad valleys partitioned by rivers that twist like ribbons. This is a landscape without dams, logging, or agriculture, an 800-mile coastline spared from the forced march of economic development. A few hours later, slightly deaf and dazed, we land in tall grass at a bend in a swift-moving river. We is a loose collection of scientists and fishermen, and both. Camp is a makeshift cluster of orange canvas tents. A Russian flag flaps over a skinned birch tree. Where are we right now?
Sopochnaya River. Just looking at Babushka. We're on a gravel bar in the middle of nowhere.
Guido Rahr, president of the Wild Salmon Center, was fumbling for his fishing rod even as we landed. Boyishly red-cheeked, he's the backbone of this Russian-American venture founded almost a decade ago that mixes sport fishing with research. American anglers pay top dollar to fish here. Their money and what they catch goes to science.
The collapse of the Soviet Union, the bottom fell out for the funding for research. So that was when we approached the Russians and said, listen, if you take us to these rivers and let us catch and release these fish, we'll support your science. The idea is not just to show them that angling tourism can work, but to try to reinvent sport fishing in such a way that it creates local jobs, but it also generates data for the scientists.
RAR's organization is dedicated to protecting wild salmon, steelhead, char, and trout. After years of heading up restoration efforts in the Pacific Northwest that were too little, too late, he's now eagerly focused on rivers he believes can still be saved.
What I hear a lot is like, well, you know, we got to restore our own fish. Why are you going all the way over to Russia to help them with their fish? And, you know, the bottom line is that if you really want to win, you want something to be here in 10,000 years, you've got to think way beyond our national border. You have to think at a global level. We've got to protect and restore our own backyards. I mean, absolutely, but we've also got to get ahead of the extinction curve in those last places while we still can.
This is one of those last places, and despite lack of sleep and food, we're already in our waders and heading out on the river. Kirill Kazishian is a professor of ichthyology at Moscow State University, a small, intense man. He's unflappable as both a scientist and angler. He's eager to get some samples and get to work.
So, now let's check for steelhead. So, maybe let's put Nick on the other side.
This river has 9 species of salmon, and he's studying the life histories of each and how they intermingle and relate to particular environments.
It will be a big opening. I don't want to say it will be Nobel Award, but it's rather close to it. Nobody knows it still. Many people trying to do it. But here we have this unique chance because everything here is pristine. Fish is pristine, environment is pristine, we can monitor the processes that are going on in nature. Maybe we will have success.
Wild steelhead, as he puts it, are the diamond in the crown of his research. They're also notoriously difficult to catch.
I think people who named steelhead as steelhead is right. The head of fish is really made from steel and lead, and only few places in the mouth of the fish where you can properly set your hook.
For this week's science, 25 samples of steelhead are needed, fish that will be weighed, measured, and a few dissected for genetic information. So the fishermen and scientists get busy. Armed with 20-foot double-handed spey rods, the long-distance casting begins in earnest. Braced against the current, Guido eases into the rhythm of the river.
The best way to show people, convince them that this is an important place to protect, is to get them waist deep in the river, preferably connected to a great big chrome steelhead that's pulling his line all the way out and is around the next bend, somersaulting in the air.
Whoa! Can you believe this? Oh my God, this thing is gigantic.
Dan Plummer, an affable young entrepreneur and a skilled fly fisherman, finally hooked him.
Oh, yeah. Look at that thing. Watch your fingers. Keep your fingers out of the water. This could eat you.
Want some help landing?
Well, yeah. That'd be good.
That's a big fish.
Thank you.
Okay, let's lead him into the shore over here, Dan.
All right.
This moment is the linchpin of the venture's success.
What's the deal here now?
Should we should bring him in and tag him and measure him.
All right.
And then let him go.
Oh, my God. Woo! That's a pretty fish.
Hey, Dan.
This fish and others caught this week will become part of the research. Over the last two field seasons, 15 different rivers in Kamchatka have been assessed by a half dozen Russian and American scientists. The fishing and science camps are a boost to the local economy, which has become dependent on caviar poaching, a threat to these very fish. And there are other looming threats, as this once isolated place is now in the sights of mining, oil, and natural gas interests. Rar's hope is to encourage the Russians to protect the rivers of Kamchatka while there's still time. It's both an ambitious and delicate task, especially in someone else's country.
I mean, they kind of do a double take and say, okay, you messed up yours, now you're a prosperous nation. You want us to not mess up ours, and what do you want to keep us back in the Stone Age? And the argument that we're making is we're not trying to stop them from developing their natural resources. We're just telling them that they've got a chance that we had and we lost 200 years ago, 150 years ago, that they can develop those resources, but why don't they set aside a few places so they can keep their options open? Instead of damaging every river, why not take a few of them and protect them?
Kamchatka offers a chance to step back in time, a laboratory of sorts for restoration efforts elsewhere. What Americans offer is 100 years of mistakes and a perspective on what the future could bring. Elizabeth Arnold, NPR News, on the banks of the Solpochnaya River.
Tomorrow, she continues her fishing trip. Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR News and the National Geographic Society. Photographs from the trip are at npr.org.